Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited, because with us today, we have Amar Bakshi. Amar is the founder of Shared Studios and Noro. Amar, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, my pleasure. So why don't we get into it? We could start with Noro. Would love to hear about what the company's focused on and how you're driving change and innovation in the market.
Sure. So Noro is designed to reduce the need for short-haul business travel. And the way we do that is through life-size, full-body, basically room-scale video conferencing environments, where two people or groups of people can interact like they're in the same room, making eye contact, moving freely. And if you think about sort of Zoom on the one hand and meeting in person on the other, there's a huge gap between the two. And so for longer meetings like co-working sessions or product sprints or, you know, M&A discussions that are 6-7 hours long, Zoom is terrible. And you don't always want to travel for every one of those meetings. And so we sit in the middle of those two.
Interesting. And so what was the inspiration behind the business?
It's actually a long story. So originally, this whole thing began as a company called Shared Studios back in 2014 as an art piece. And The idea was, how do you connect strangers around the world in intimate ways? And how do you create moments where it's special to meet someone from the other side of the world? So I actually, as an artist and as an art project, set up a gold shipping container in a gallery in New York and one in Tehran, and invited strangers to come in and interact through this wall-sized screen. So basically, like when you walk inside one container, you feel like you're in the same room as someone in an identical one, in this case, in Tehran. And people came in and we thought it would be cool, but it was really deep. You know, people would come in and they'd spend an hour. They'd come out weeping or giddy. They'd bring their family and friends. They'd perform live. Women weren't able to dance for a live audience in Tehran, but they could dance for a live audience in New York. And so this art project really took off. We got a lot of media from most major outlets, and we started growing all over the world, called it Portals, and got up to about 60 or 70 of these shipping containers, not always shipping containers, but all over the globe, and from refugee camps to art museums to universities. And basically, this art project had to become a business to sustain itself at that scale, which it did. COVID struck, and a lot of our clients who were corporate sponsors of the shipping container said, you know, this would actually be very useful in our corporate offices when we one day get back to work. We're going to travel less, hopefully. And we want our teams and our corporate culture to kind of have that, the same magic that you created in these shipping containers.
Right.
And so we started to build out the Noro product. And so it's really the same evolution of how do you use technology to connect people and spaces in meaningful ways, but just applied more purposefully to the corporate and the context of work, beyond corporate, but of work.
Fantastic. And then, so brilliant idea. So then I think the next question I need to ask you is what was the inspiration behind Shared Studios back in 2014?
Yeah. So the inspiration was back in 2006 to 2009, I was a reporter with the Washington Post. I traveled all over the world, 12 countries over 3 years, and found that the most powerful conversations I had were when the camera was off, when I was moving from one side of a country to another. I didn't have an iPhone. There's no, I didn't have Netflix. So just out of boredom, I talked to the person next to me with no particular purpose. I didn't have anything to get, not networking, not a job, nothing. And those became some of the most profound conversations of my life, the ones where I feel at once like very connected to someone I wouldn't imagine, and very small. You realize, oh my God, there's, you know, billions of people on this planet and I'm just a tiny speck. And that feeling of being lost in the world, I really came to miss when I came back to the US. I was in law school. It was always like, get a date, get a job. You know, it's normal life. And when I was on the train or the bus, I never talked to anyone. I was always looking at my phone. So I thought, you know, this is really something I miss. It's not something where it's clear that there's like a market inefficiency. It's just a spiritual kind of lack And so I thought, you know, well, art can be a way of addressing that thing where people don't know that they need something, but you think they do. And so I started this as an art piece to try to recreate that feeling. That was one inspiration. There was another inspiration with my grandmother, which I can tell you about, or we can circle back to it. Tell you
No,
about
I'd
it.
love to
All
hear
right.
about it.
All right. The other inspiration with my grandmother was so I went to Pakistan while I was traveling around the world. And my grandmother actually had fled Pakistan 60 years earlier in 1947 during partition. And she never went back. And she was now living in Columbia, Maryland. So I'm from DC. And so when I was in Pakistan, she was so curious to know what life was like in Lahore, where she grew up. And I was like, Nanny, don't worry. One day you'll be able to wear Google glasses and walk around as a hologram and talk to whoever you want, you know. But for now, you got to content yourself with my stories. And she read my stories, but there was something that she was missing. And I thought, well, what she wants, she'd want to share a chai with like a young kid or an older person. Doesn't matter. If she could just walk to her neighborhood Starbucks or coffee shop and share a chai with someone in Pakistan, like that would bring her such profound happiness. And again, you know, technology got better and better, but you know, you're not going to use chat roulette for that sort of thing. And you can't send a LinkedIn request. I mean, the tools weren't made for that kind of encounter. And so I thought, well, you need something different. And that's where the art idea came. And so my grandmother, and so, you know, in a kind of beautiful twist of fate, one of our early portals was in Washington, D.C., and we had a Cuban woman who had not been back to Havana in, you know, 60 years, interact with a young man who grew up on the same street as she did and was currently in Havana. We had a portal in Cuba at the time. And I thought, you know, it's beautiful. She was dancing, and it was like, I never thought this would be possible. Now, of course, the technology is there. Of course, you could Zoom someone, but it doesn't feel like you're in the same room with someone who grew up on your street, and the serendipity and all of that gives it a kind of human magic that I think sometimes we lose track of when we're chasing efficiency or we're chasing a problem solution relationship to everything.
You know, one of the thoughts that come to mind is the logistical challenges that you
Oh
must
man, yeah.
face establishing these locations outside the US. What color can you give us on what that was like and
Yeah,
the challenges?
it's a that was the essence, you know, the essence of Shared Studios now is a global network of these sites. But, you know, each time you put a shipping container anywhere, or it doesn't have to be a shipping container. We're in a refugee camp in Nacavale in a bottled brick house. We're in a displaced persons camp in Erbil, Iraq, in a gas station that they painted gold. So, you know, but they're all similar interior dimensions. Well, in each of these sites, you need a community that really, or at least an individual, and probably a community that really, usually they want to showcase to the world that they're more than people think they are, and they want to learn from the world. And so people reach out from all over the world saying they want to join the network. And that's how we kind of get the original conversation going. But then there's tons of logistics. And you think of a country like Cuba and or Iran, where we began, those are some of the hardest to work with because of, you know, pretty repressive regimes, a lot of control over communication. There's a lot you have to do around security. You know, we're working with artists who are very courageous and they know the system pretty well and they know how to dance that line and say, hey, you know, government of Iran, we're connecting to America, sure, but we're also connecting to Cuba. And, you know, you love Cuba. So we kind of, it's a lot of like that kind of thing artists do of sort of dancing at the margins. The raw logistics are tough because, yeah, we have to get the technology into any given place. We have instructions on how to build the portals locally, but the tech has to be delivered, and that can be quite an issue.
Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just, you know, I mean, there's endless stories. Like some of the countries we've tried to set up in are very hard, you know, Zimbabwe and others, and you know, we've been burned and we've had great surprising success. And we've now connected nearly 1 million people. And I would say one thing that we're really proud of is out of all of that, maybe there were like three or four unpleasant occasions. And usually that's because someone was very, very drunk and they got let in, but nothing else. And I think that's a testament to the power of our curators in the network. Like we are in Milwaukee in the Imani community, the most incarcerated zip code in America, predominantly Black. And there's a lot of tagging that goes on especially like projects and outsider projects. And our gold container was not tagged at all in 5 years because there was a lot of local ownership and great local community members running the portal. We call them curators. And that's the guts of what we do.
Fantastic. So, you know, one of the thoughts that comes to mind, and this topic comes up often, is when, you know, you're a founder, you have to walk this line between investing in your tech, but also sales and marketing to ensure that the world knows you exist. I'd love to hear your thoughts, how that conversation took place inside Share Studios, and any key lessons that you learned along the way.
Well, on the tech front, I would say we had to be extraordinarily cheap because there was no real business, you know. I was trying to find relatively inexpensive ways of adjusting technology that already exists to create the effect I wanted. And so, you know, like 3D print a little lens offset to create a slightly different relationship between the sensor and the lens to solve for a particular problem we faced, or find the right hardware manufacturing partner to provide us the gear for free, etc. I don't have a good answer on the tension between the two, because I think over time, up until we raised money for Noro, we really focused on the community and less on the tech, because when people come in, they think the tech is what's going to appeal to them, but what actually gets them moved is the fact that they spent 30 minutes talking to someone on the other side of the world in the kind of conversation they just never otherwise would have.
Sure.
And the tech is an enabler of that, but it's not the thing, right? Originally, in the beginning, our marketing was really more PR. We worked with PR partners and PR agencies, and we got a ton of press, which basically was our marketing. So for a number of years, we just had inbounds galore through press. And I'm a former journalist, so I also knew, you know, what kinds of events and pairings would get press. So, you know, I knew when we were connected to Tehran, Obama was negotiating a nuclear deal with them. The media wants a different angle onto the current story of the day. They'll do that again and again. What they won't do is sort of your one-time launch of this cool thing. Maybe they do that once, but they're not going to do that again and again. But portals, we could keep twisting it. You know, we were like an Art Basel, and we did an art exchange with a famous artist in another country, or we were at the Sundance Film Festival, and we connected great filmmakers. We could curate something that was pressworthy in all our portals, and that's how we got the word out. Also, there's no clear buyer, right? I mean, portals doesn't have a clear target buyer, so who do you even market to? You're really marketing to a certain kind of individual who feels very passionate about the idea of making their community more global. And those could be the head of global studies at universities, but oftentimes it's just a retired person in a district in a rural part of America that feels like, hey, this would be really cool. And, you know, when people think about us, they think that we're not interested in the world. Well, that's not true. Just because we're in a rural part of America doesn't mean that we're, you know, xenophobes. And so we want to showcase ourselves too. So, you know, we've had some great portals in rural parts of America. And that's been because I'm thinking of one person, just loved the idea.
You know, it's I'm smiling to myself as I'm thinking about this, because so many of the founders that we've had on the podcast talk about this theme of know your buyer, but you're in this really unique space when you're saying, no, your buyer isn't, because I don't have one.
You know, I think it's taken us 10 years, and it's been a gradual project from like a movement art piece to a business. Now we know our buyers for Share Studios. Our buyers are basically universities and educational institutions that want a portal in their institution for the long haul to connect to other university campuses, to do hackathons. You know, we've had hackathons between students at Johns Hopkins and kids in Lebanon, Gaza, and Israel. Working on concrete challenges. And then we also have things like learn, you know, how to salsa dance from, Mexico City through the portal. And the buyers now are these kind of global studies or these deans or provosts of university institutions. But it took us a long time going through every other conceivable permutation to realize that that's probably our most reliably addressable buyer that we could put marketing dollars behind to actually get. Whereas every other type was more like a spiritual being that's incredibly hard to market to identify, sorry.
So it's interesting. Earlier you mentioned pandemic rolled around, environment changes, and if I recall correctly, that there was a corporate interest of how they can recreate this connection inside the office. How did it then morph from there until universities and colleges realizing that they could benefit by connecting their students with their counterparts around the world?
Well, before, you know, from 2014 to 2020, we had a lot of university clients, but they would bring a gold shipping container onto their campus for 1 to 3 months, and it would be a big spectacle. And, you know, sort of you name the university, we've been to many, many, many of the top, not just the top, but many, many universities around America and the world over the years, but always for short periods of time because the container, it's big, it's weird, it's bulky, you know, you're not going to park it there forever. You can only have 5 to 7 people at a time in the container, and their classes were bigger. So the new product, Noro, is really like a 9-foot wide by 7-foot high video wall. It's an LED video wall that sits at floor level. I can send you some pictures to throw it up for those who are on video to see, or they can see it at noro.co, N-O-R-O. And this we think is a lot better for universities and for us as a business because they are permanently installed. You can connect them within your own network at no cost. So we're talking to a network of universities across Southeast Asia, U21, and saying, every one of you who, you know, you do so many programs together, why don't you connect in this way as well? And there's a lot of momentum there. But you can also connect to our global network, and you can learn from parts of the world and serve parts of the world you wouldn't otherwise connect with. Like we're talking to a law school that wants to provide legal advice to displaced people, and portals is a great way to do that.
Fantastic. I love it. Connect. I mean, you don't necessarily, you know, you're right. You know, you think about Zoom, it could be a bit impersonal because I think a lot of times, you know, we'll get on meetings and, you know, the agenda set, you know, exactly, or having a good idea of what you're talking about. So be able to do it a bit more organically to connect people who wouldn't otherwise see each other is brilliant. So on a complete side note, hit my hat, but it's a great idea. I'm glad you're having success. So with that, I think you also mentioned that you've raised outside capital, without, you know, share details, but if you can give us some insights on what that experience was like and key lessons.
Yeah. And what I'd say is, so there are two things that work really well with what we've built, the Shared Studios portals and the Noro portals. Yes, one is it's the context with Shared Studios, but then there's also like some very practical things that make it powerful. You're making eye contact. You see the full body, you move freely. Body language, there are various estimates of how much, but a significant percentage of communication takes place through body language, through mirroring subtle cues. And you lose that on Zoom. Eye contact also hugely important for building trust, assessing trustworthiness. We lose that on Zoom. And then there's always just looking at your laptop, a screen you use for 30 other things, you're typing away. And then moving boosts creativity pretty substantially. And you've seen this in lots of brainstorming studies that have been done over the years. So Zoom has a bunch of really practical limitations that people try to solve now with like moving cameras and so forth. And I think those are fine, but I don't think they're as good as, you know, basically recreating how humans are meant to interact with one another, which is very naturally without things zooming in and out, just there. Especially over longer periods of time. So I think that's what the Noro portal now does extremely well for universities and corporate clients alike. On raising money, yeah, we raised money. JLL Spark is our lead investor in our pre-seed round. And we are now, and it depends when this podcast comes out, but we are now doing our seed round after having done basically some quiet pilots, some beta pilots to refine the product. And our commercial launch is pretty much now. We won this AV Tech Award at ISC in Barcelona, which was a really big deal for us. We're proud as one of the best new AV tech solutions in the industry. And so we are talking to a lot of different companies about doing pilots, and we're installing a bunch too. I'm not sure which of these are public or not, so I'll just wait for, you know, but I'll give you a sense. A major global consulting firm, a major American conglomerate that owns a lot of subsidiaries and wants to have better relations with the subsidiary. The consulting firm wants to connect their offices for mentorship in particular, and also client presentations. They have a bunch of fixed locations. One of the things we're really interested in is these conglomerates or these companies like across America in particular with multiple offices in similar geographic sectors, so like up and down the Midwest or up and down a coast because you have a lot of overlapping time zones. There's a lot of short business travel, and not always between New York and Boston, but between, Wichita and another smaller city where there's a transfer, and it's just painful. And so that's a pain point we're really trying to address in our initial go-to-market. And then certain industries, in particular. So some on manufacturing, some on energy, some in finance, and some in consulting to see where the best match is.
So, again, another topic that regularly comes up is just product market fit. And, a big part of it just sounds like it's discovery coupled with iteration. It sounds like that's your experience as well. But it sounds like you also have the benefit of a tremendous amount of lessons learned with Share Studios that you're able to incorporate into the success that Noro's having, which is brilliant. Big part of the success of any company are its people. Would love to hear your thoughts on how you go about building culture and how you think about building teams.
Yeah, it's been a big learning journey for me because I think when I started building Shared Studios, I didn't think about building teams. I'm a law grad and an MBA. I thought of this as an art project that I was creating. And then I had to sort of be humbled by my team and say, hey, this is not you, this is all of us. And I also recognize that, especially this kind of project, it's a communal, it's a group effort. One thing that's amazing about Shared Studios, and I really don't think there are many companies like this in the world, is you have such radically different people collaborating every day. You have a refugee in Nacogdoches, Uganda, talking to a private school teacher in Greenwich, Connecticut, to curate an event in the morning. And then in the afternoon, that same refugee is talking to a climate activist in Barbados, and then and on and on and on. So you have such different people. And so when you think about the kind of culture we're building, it in many ways is the kind of culture I wish existed in the world, where you could collaborate really fluidly across difference. And I think in order to do that, you need a culture that's like excited by difference, excited by not understanding, gives the benefit of the doubt, more than tolerant, is like energized when they don't quite get what's being, and work through it, curious, of course, happy, and that kind of culture can happen anywhere. It can happen in art, it can happen in business. I think over the course of the company, I learned a lot because it started as an art piece and it morphed into a business. And especially around 2018, 2019, the culture in the kind of art world was very much a culture of activism, which is important and has its place, but it's very different than, and I think a lot of companies face this, but it's very different than the culture of a kind of, like, if you're a profit-oriented company, it's a very different, could be a very different culture. And we were kind of in between all of it. We were like, we're an art piece, we're doing social good, but we're also a company and we have to matter, meet our bottom line. And we never paid people well. We were always sort of struggling to get, a high enough. So we also have to take on clients that you might not agree with everything that they stand for, right? And so navigating that and building out that culture while in it was hard. So now I think we have, and there was just a lot. COVID, obviously, it was just such
Sure.
a shake. What I've learned now is, set a very clear goal set for whatever what the institution is, and try as much as possible to let people, how to say this, come to work in whatever way works best for them. But as long as they're all aligned on that big goal. And so clarifying that big goal, not moving between goals, I think has been very important. Our team culture now, I think, is fantastic. There are a lot of people in our company who've been here now for, 5+ years. So it's very established. It's a mature team. Our CEO, Tommaso, has built and sold a bunch of companies in the past. And as an experienced manager, I think keeps a really good emotional tenor that earlier in the company we didn't have. Just a calm, a methodical, nothing's too big a deal, nothing's too good, nothing's too bad. Let's just keep plodding, keep working. So anyway, as you can see, I don't sort of have three bullets on this, but it's more a sense that what's most important with the team is that they're aligned around a common vision. And if you move that vision, it's hard. And you shouldn't do that, unless you really have to.
And so with that, I'd love to know your philosophy on hiring. Common or popular mantra these days is hire slow, fire fast. Would love to know what your experience has been and how you think about building a team today.
Yeah, I think if someone's a terrible fit, fire fast, of course, makes sense. But if you're hiring slow, normally you don't have a terrible fit. You have someone where it's not quite working. I think it depends what kind of company you are. But for me, just at this stage of my life, the culture that I'd like to build is one where, if you're in, we're going to try to make it work and we'll give you the time to make it work. And we'll try to make it work with you. Right. And that's different than how I've been in prior arrangements. But I think it builds a sense of trust and camaraderie that's like worth a lot more than the inefficiency lost for 3 or 6 months while you're finding out the right pairing. So once you make the commitment, I'm not running a sort of quantitative hedge fund where every millisecond was worth $1 million, right? This is the fact that people believe in the company is what allows us to do such good work. And the fact that they feel safe to try things is what allows us to have such a diverse group working together. It's very collaborative and there's not a lot of sniping. And I think that is it's partly because we have made longer term commitments, even when at first it doesn't feel quite right.
Interesting.
If you're picking someone who's bright, committed, and curious and willing to learn, then, for us, we don't need 3 extra months. We're not in a brutal race. We've been running for a decade, right? It's a different company. It's a different thing. With Noro and with tech, we've had our cases where we've hired wrong and we fired very, very quickly, but that was in a matter of weeks. We've immediately knew it was the wrong fit and it was so abundantly clear. But we haven't had many cases where it's sort of 2 to 6 months in and we fire. That's rare.
Okay. Obviously, big topic today is artificial intelligence. Invariably, I find myself in conversations of, what's the degree that it's on a product roadmap? Would love to hear your thoughts of how that fits in connecting people in different locations.
Yeah. So there's one element where AI, machine learning more broadly, in real time with image processing, unlock some real opportunities for us in the not too distant future, but I don't know how close it is. So we're conveying sort of 1080 or, up to 2K resolution images. You can now, with a couple second delay, make that 4K using AI. You can really resolve the upscale the image quite effectively. But in real time, where you really have minimal acceptance of latency, that's very tough. Other examples are, you're in one room, I'm in another room. In portals, they both look, in the shared studios portals, they're both containers. They both look exactly the same. And that's actually quite a powerful effect. You feel like you're in the same room. With Noro portals right now, when you connect two sites, they look like different rooms. They are different rooms. But you can separate the figures from the background and create a synthetic scene that replicates your room, or that puts some sort of shared artifacts and whiteboards on the back, or, et cetera, et cetera. But again, that adds too much latency now. But I think we're close. And then there are other sort of interactive effects that you can layer on top of just a screen with software. And so we've invested pretty heavily in the computers we install with each of our clients because we'd like it to be strong enough in a year or two to run the latest algorithms to do that. So I think it's very important there. On Shared Studios, the mission has always been, how do you connect people who wouldn't otherwise connect? And we distinguished ourselves from, let's say an old school LinkedIn where you're searching for a particular skill set or a particular type of how someone self-identifies. But serendipity is not about self-identification. It's sort of, oh, I didn't expect that you and I shared this family trait or you and I shared so-and-so. What's interesting with AI, and now you see a bunch of companies doing this, are, you have these AIs that'll call you, you chat with them for a while, it ingests tons of data about you and everyone else who calls that AI and starts to make interesting connections. And depending on how you tweak it, it could tweak it to be more or less serendipitous, more or less outside your traditional field. I think that's very interesting, right? How do LLMs allow us to create different kinds of social networks that we might not have imagined? What can it unpack about us? How can it understand us and create psychographic profiles? I mean, it's scary and exciting at the same time. And so I think for Shared Studios, it's just an interesting space that we're watching.
Yeah, I'm also curious to know whether or not, and well, how often you encounter language barriers traditionally with either Shared Studios and Aura, and then whether or not that's actually part material part of the experience, or you feel like that's something that there's value in solving and making sure that two people knew what exactly what they were saying.
Yeah, I mean, with Shared Studios, we've always had translators at every portal. You can imagine how expensive that's been historically. You know, we connect Iraq, Tehran and Mexico. We need a Spanish to Farsi translator. You know, that's not easy. And so now being able to do that with software is incredibly powerful. And it can be very subtle too, right? We can run text and sub basically caption the video rather than dub it, which I think is really neat. And of course, what's coming now is crazy, where you can actually dub it in their voice in real time. I think it's too soon to tell. Like, a lot of these things are fantastic in that they open up the kinds of connections that were inconceivable before. Will we lose something? Sure, we'll lose the difficulty of language and the necessity of learning it and the knowledge that comes from recognizing that certain languages just don't have a word for what you have. And this is, I guess, this is AI across the board, right? It will make so many things so much easier and I think unlock so much good. But if we're not careful in thinking through what we're giving up, we might find in 10 years, like, oh yeah, there was something good about reading a whole book. There was something good about brainstorming with a blank canvas as opposed to one with, pre-generated prompt ideas from an LLM. And I think the same thing is true with translation, that it's fantastic, it's doing a lot of good, but there are certainly things that you're losing when it's made that seamless.
I hats off to you for not only creating, but keeping to this authentic experience of meeting somebody where they are. It's brilliant. Now you're gonna make me want to go find a shared studio so that I
Well, get
can.
one in Montana. You could be one of the evangelists that brings it into your community,
Mountain
you
West,
can.
see what it's like to. I don't know. Well, I'm not gonna call myself a cowboy, but there are plenty of them around
Oh
here.
yeah, that'd be great. That'd be great. We've certainly had cowboys in here.
Good stuff. One of the questions I love to wrap up with is if you had an opportunity to go back and talk to your younger self, what would you share?
I would share something to the effect of life is big and full, and what you're doing is important, but it is not the only important thing, right? I think when I started Shared Studios, it was the only thing that mattered to me for a while. And you kind of need that as a founder just to be crazy enough and committed enough, but you can overdo it. And I think saying, look, I'm going to give it my all, but no matter what, there's more life in me. There's other things in this world that matter. It's very important for the culture, for the happiness of the people who are involved, and just for the reality that, yeah, this is a beautiful art project, but the world is facing a lot of concurrent problems, and nobody alone is going to solve these things. You're always just a part of this large struggle. I think so. A mix of that humility and sense of proportion would be nice. It would have saved me a lot of anxiety. I think now, as I embark on new projects, I'm still work very hard and I'm very committed to it. But I'm not afraid that if it fails, I've failed. I recognize that. Life is full of these ups and downs, and sometimes these things are a little bit out of your control, or sometimes if something doesn't work out, it might be for the best, or all of these kind of little things that soften me at the edges. I would have said, just chill, chill a little bit.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing. Tamar, I appreciate your time. If any of our listeners want to get a hold of you, whether it's someone who's interested in joining the
Sure.
team,
Yeah.
potential investor, how can they find you?
Yeah, so they can email me, Amar, Amar, at sharedstudios.com. And they can also visit Shared Studios, that just learn more about that, SHARED STUDIOS.com, or noro.co, NORO.co. Noro's obviously for the enterprise and workplace product.
Fantastic. Good stuff. Appreciate your time again. Thank you.
Thank you, Christian.
Again, for our audience, Amar Bakshi, founder of Share Studios and Noro. Again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinChat Management. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor who would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you've got something out of this interview, please share this episode on social media. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.